You've heard our open themes with listeners talking about their vocations.
Missouri dairy farmers, love issues, etc.
And what they're doing while listening to Issues Etc.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love Issues Etc.
We're looking for more of these elements to include in our open themes. Tell us about your vocation, hobby, or what you do while listening to Issues Etc. Call the Issues Etc. comment line 24/7 at 618-223-8382. If you make a mistake, just start over. 618-223-8382. Thanks for listening, and thanks for contributing to Issues Etc. 618-223-8382.
We will be one people under one God. One people under one God. Under one God, saluting one American flag. One American flag.
But as Christians, at least, we do have to kind of sit back and be like, okay, at what point do we decide we're not part of the American culture anymore? We're not a subculture of the American thinking anymore.
You can't make the argument that sexual diversity is good because God said of everything that he made in Genesis 1 that it was good.
This is Alex in Northwest Indiana, and I am an Uber listener.
That term cafeteria Catholics kind of rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? That alliteration that really describes so many Roman Catholics, especially in American society. Recently, Tim Kaine, Democratic presidential vice presidential candidate, was talking about very openly, very glibly about how his beliefs about marriage equality differ radically from that of his church. And he thinks that's going to change. Not his mind, but his church's mind. What do you have to do as a Roman Catholic in American politics to get to that level? We're going to be talking about that along with the impact of a contraceptive ideology around the world. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse will be our guest. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Wednesday afternoon, the 21st of September. After our conversation with Jennifer, we're going to get our weekly update on the November elections with Mark Hemingway of the Weekly Standard and Molly Hemingway of the Federalist. You can join us for the next hour with your questions or your comments, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback at issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at issuesetc. The Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse is a regular guest. She joins us to talk about cafeteria Catholics and American politics and the impact of contraceptive ideology around the world. She's founder and president of the Ruth Institute, taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and author of several books, including her latest, The Sexual Revolution and Its Victims. Jennifer, welcome back.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for having me.
What's a cafeteria Catholic? That's a term that's often thrown around, but what does that actually mean?
Well, it means a person who picks and chooses what they like out of the Catholic menu, so to speak, rather than having a radical following of Christ in every dimension. We just pick what we want according to some predetermined criteria, usually determined by some aspect or another of the culture.
Now, the term may not be as familiar as the actual occurrence, which is virtually, not all, but virtually every national level Catholic politician, in some sense, is one of these. Talk about that.
Well, some people would say that. I would not agree with that assessment. Actually, there, I would say every pro-choice, pro-gay marriage Catholic is obviously a Catholic cafeteria Catholic. But some people would say that if you are in favor of the death penalty, you're a Catholic cafeteria Catholic. Well, that's not exactly true because the church has always permitted the death penalty. We're just saying it should be used in fewer and fewer cases today than ever before. And so you can have some disagreement about how often it should be used without saying you're in defiance, open defiance of the church's teaching. Likewise, the Catholic bishops, for example, have a certain position that they've decided on immigration. But even the bishops themselves, most of them will tell you that the position on immigration is not as as significant, in a sense, as the position on life. Archbishop Gomez of Los Angeles recently made this argument in a very clear manner, you know, that while it's very important that we have a humane, Christ-like position on immigration, it's not the equal to the position on life, because without life, you don't have any, there's nothing, there's nothing else, you know, and there are many possible ways to implement a good immigration policy, but there just isn't much nuance in the question of the taking of innocent life. You're either for it or against it, and if you're against it, that's an open defiance of a very basic teaching of the Catholic Church.
Emma Green has written recently for The Atlantic the title, Why Only Cafeteria Catholics Can Survive in American Politics. She says, the only path that's possible, it seems, is to advocate policies that fully follow the Church's teachings on Jesus, or that don't, for Catholic leaders in the United States. Why is it that the higher you want to ascend in the echelons of American politics, at least it seems just to be a phenomenon, the more of those high-caliber Catholic teachings, like life, like marriage, have to be compromised?
Well, I think the reason is what Jesus told us long ago, you know, that the world is going to hate you because the world has hated me, you know, and we know that when we're in opposition to the culture, whenever we tell the culture, hey, the rich and powerful don't get to do anything they feel like, there are constraints on what you get to do and what you don't get to do, somebody with more money and power than I have, or the Pope has, or the parish priest has, that people are going to be mad if you tell them you don't get to do whatever you want. And so it seems to me you've got rich people and powerful people on the Democratic side being mad about one set of things, and people on the Republican side being mad at another set of things. But I think all of us as Christians should expect that when we tell people they don't get to do whatever they want, that you're going to encounter some opposition. And that's been the case going all the way back to the apostles, of course, as we know.
Does it mean that in terms of just kind of the representation of what it means to be Catholic in Washington, D.C., so to speak,
yes,
is not going to be a cross-section of American Catholicism in terms of theology or moral
well,
teaching?
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting to me because, of course, we have all of these pro-choice Democrats who tell you they're Catholic, like Tim Kaine, as you mentioned, Nancy Pelosi being another, Joe Biden being another. If the Catholic Church, if American Catholics would do what they ought to do, there's no way that the Democratic Party would be as crazy as it is. You know, I mean, it's because people vote for the Democratic Party. It's because Catholics vote for Nancy Pelosi and Tim Kaine and all these people. It's because those people cheered for Tim Kaine in his parish. His fellow congregants cheered for him when he was nominated vice president. They didn't care that he's in favor of killing babies. They didn't care about that, you know. So the Democratic Party could not have gone off the rails so badly if American Catholics would vote the way they really ought to vote in accordance with the Church's teaching. And I think something similar can be said about the Republican Party, though it's not quite as stark or dramatic. But on the Republican side, you know, there are plenty of people in the Republican Party who believe that that wealth is a sign that of virtue in a certain way. There's you could call them Ayn Rand virtue of selfishness type of people. And if American Catholics refuse to vote for that, the Republican Party couldn't be what it is. I mean, what we really need, I think, is another party. We need a party that's authentically Christ-like and authentically Christian. And I think, you know, there'd be a lot of Catholics in it. There'd be a lot of Missouri Synod Lutherans in it and Mormons in it, too, I think, you know. In fact, we used to joke around, Todd, you'll get a kick out of this, when I lived in California, the sort of gallows humor among Catholics, conservative Catholics, was, you know, if you really want to implement Catholic social teaching in Sacramento, what you do is you remove all the Catholics from the legislature and replace them with Mormons, and we would be much closer to Catholic teaching if we did that. So I think there's room for another political party. I honestly do.
Okay, a couple of questions here. Someone would say, look, the Catholic Church, even in America, has a hierarchical system, a top-down system. That's simply a matter of fact. And so why is it that it seems to be so difficult, or in some cases impossible, for a bishop, Tim Kaine's bishop, someone to say, look, this just can't be.
Yes.
We can't commune you. Why is church discipline so difficult here?
Well, you know, I could ask that question of just about any other religion. At this point in history, nobody's disciplining their people very well from the looks of it. And you know, you have to say, it has to say, the old saw about Catholics is that the Pope was totalitarian and bossing everybody around. I hope all of you Reformation guys have gotten over that one, okay? I mean, you really have to work to get kicked out of the Catholic Church. Nobody's in charge, it seems like. You know, it'd be better if we were a little bit more top-down and hierarchical. But why is it so hard? I wish I had an answer to that. I really do. It's quite frustrating. And one of the things we've tried to do in the Ruth Institute is to try to celebrate religious leaders who do the right thing. So not too long ago, we sent 24 roses to Archbishop Chaput because of the way he was interpreting Pope Francis's latest document that had caused a lot of confusion. Archbishop Chaput of Philadelphia made a very clear statement of how he was going to implement it. And we said, hooray, let's celebrate this guy. And as a matter of fact, I think Tim Kaine's bishop, it should be said that he did make a statement saying the Catholic Church is not going to change its teaching on gay marriage. So sorry, Tim, but that ain't going to happen. Actually, he didn't mention Tim Kaine by name, and he didn't reprimand him. He didn't, you know, he didn't call him out in any specific way, but at least he said that. At least he said, no, this is not going to change. And so, you know, as small as that may be, I think that is something we're celebrating in the current environment.
Now, speaking of Catholics, there are some that are lobbying the United Nations. What is that all about?
Oh, my golly. Oh, my golly. Well, we found out a couple of weeks ago that this little group that I had never heard of in the United Kingdom, a Catholic dissident group, they call themselves the Windsgard Institute for Catholic Studies, is headed up by an ex-priest, and they're list of positions looks like a laundry list of 1970s dissenting positions. You know, they want women priests, and mainly they want the church to change its teaching on contraception. And so this little organization, nobody's ever heard of them, they were brought in to the United Nations. They were sponsored at an event. I don't quite know how the United Nations works, so I think it was like off campus, but it was sponsored by three of the large agencies of the United Nations. And they were invited to give their statement on why the Catholic Church should change its teaching on contraception. And they, at the same time, when we found out about that, a bunch of us found out about that, we said, you know what, this is crazy. These people are going to go all over the place. They're going to create the same kind of confusion about what the church is teaching is, about it, the likelihood of its changing, and so on. So a bunch of us put together a counter statement to it, and we got 500 Catholics with advanced degrees to sign the statement that's basically saying that the church's teaching is correct. It has always been correct. It's the teaching that all the churches held, you know, right up until 5 minutes ago. And furthermore, it's correct. It's right. It's good. And it's decent. And so that's what that episode at the United Nations generated, a response from the rest of us to say, no, this is not authentically Catholic teaching.
There's always something valuable to pull from this unbelievable document that was produced by a Pope,
Paul VI.
Paul VI, Humanae Vitae.
Yes.
A remarkable document that you say proves to be absolutely prophetic when it comes to the matters it talked about. What are you describing?
Well, there's a famous paragraph in Humanae Vitae. This was written in 1968, and those of you who are old enough may remember there was a lot of pressure on the Catholic Church to change its teaching on contraception, and there had been Vatican II, and you know, we weren't using Latin anymore, and people thought, well, there was a commission appointed to study the matter. People thought, well, maybe the church will finally join the 20th century, and you know, it'll be great, and they'll, you know, we'll be just like all of our neighbors, you know. And Pope Paul VI did not do that. He surprised everybody, and he reaffirmed the teaching. Well, one of the paragraphs in there basically said consequences. What will the consequences be if we do this? Not to say he was making a consequentialist argument, because he wasn't. He was making, you know, he's arguing from first principles. But he did say the consequences will be negative. And he talked about people losing respect for women. He talked about infidelity. He talked about general lowering of moral standards, people losing the sense of urgency about their personal chastity if they had access to contraception. And then finally, the biggest one that I spent a little time talking about is, he said, what is going to happen if governments get their hand on this power? And to me, what the world is asking for from the Catholic Church is, they're saying, why won't you give us your moral sanction for contraception? You know, why can we not have morally sanctioned contraception? Because it's not like the Pope can stop anybody, you know. But what he said was, if you've got governments with a moral sanction to use contraception, they're going to be imposing it on people. Sooner or later, they're going to think this is a fine method for them to be imposing. And if you just look around the world, you can see that that's absolutely what has happened. Todd, literally this week, just 2 days ago, I saw about sterilization camps in India where women have died, and they finally got a judicial ruling saying we have to do something about these camps because it's a little, you know, it's not right somehow, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, the people are being paid incentives, you know, incentives to see how many people they can get to accept voluntarily being sterilized. These the women are not getting properly informed. They're not getting properly fully informed consent, and so on. It's appalling, and it's happening right now. And there is not one libertarian organization saying this is too much power for the government. There's not one feminist organization saying this is an abuse of women and girls. It's appalling. And really, people of faith are the only ones, mostly Catholic, not all Catholic, but mostly people of faith are the only ones saying there's something wrong here and this has got to stop. And that's why it was so ironic that these these aging dissenters, let's call them that politely, these aging dissenters are being sponsored by the United Nations, which just has tons of money to throw to them, you know, to stand up there like sock puppets and say what's going to make the United Nations look good. And with no understanding at all that what Pope Paul VI had to say was absolutely prophetic, and we should be listening to him, not trying to figure out some way to weasel out of what he said.
Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is founder and president of the Ruth Institute. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of several books, including her latest, The Sexual Revolution and Its Victims. You'll find a link to this book and to the Ruth Institute under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Jennifer, thank you very much.
You're very welcome, Todd.
When we come back, our weekly update on the November elections. Mark and Molly Hemingway will be our guests from the Weekly Standard and the Federalist. Stay tuned.
Memoria Press invites all Issues Etc. listeners to explore our Simply Classical curriculum, a set of full-year academic curriculum packages for children with learning challenges. Our classical writing program and our Christian studies are now based on your favorite CPH Bible storybooks. To learn more, visit classicalspecialneeds.com and use promo code LPR to save on your initial purchase. That's classicalspecialneeds.com.
Over and over again, I tried to let the entire book reflect this, that the holiness of all the saints is only the holiness of Jesus reflected in their lives.
Pastor Will Wheaton, author of the new book, Celebrating the Saints.
And this holiness of Christ is the thing which the saints grabbed onto in faith, and it illumined their lives.
You can purchase Celebrating the Saints by calling 1-800-325-3040 or at issuesetc.org.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you find yourself fixing the theology on store-bought greeting cards when you give them to friends and family? Put away that Sharpie. EdCruesome.com has greeting cards, art, jewelry, certificates, church banners, housewares, and all sorts of fantastic gifts that proclaim Christ crucified for us. Whether you're a value shopper or a collector, you'll find something at EdCruesome.com. That's ADCRUCEM.com.
There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
The Substitute Organist Service, aptly abbreviated SOS, really has come to our rescue.
Pastor Jim Hollowatch of Christ Lutheran Church in Jackson, Mississippi.
With the ever-growing shortage of skilled musicians in our community, we were approaching a real crisis. But thanks to the Substitute Organist Service, help is always just minutes away. With its easy, intuitive interface, friendly customer service, and outstanding musicianship, you really couldn't ask for more.
You can find out more about the Substitute Organist Service at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the Issues Etc. Journal logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, and sign up to receive the church bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. issuesetc.org. Look for the Issues Etc. Journal logo and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc.